Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through U.S. Airways with direct flights from Tallahassee to Charlotte and Washington, D.C., and over 200 connections to destinations around the globe. Fares and information available online at usairways.com. Lisa Miller and Associates, offering strategies to solve legislative, regulatory, and business development challenges. Every challenge offers new opportunities for individually tailored client solutions. Online at lisamillerassociates.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 500,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace, online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Lawmakers are walking the line between an effort to protect privacy and a push to keep cracking down on pill mills.
The pendulum may have gone too far, and that would have affected their ability to get bad guys.
Also tonight, the Senate's version of a bill aiming to regulate telemedicine extends the practice to out-of-state doctors, nurses, and pharmacists, but some argue that goes too far.
They're not licensed in Florida. No matter how many exceptions we make, they're not licensed in Florida, so they don't have the same accountability as Florida physicians do.
We'll also see if medical tourism and brownfield development are good prescriptions for boosting Florida business. The 2014 Florida lawmaking session continues. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. After an information leak last year, lawmakers want a better way to decide who gets to access a state database tracking prescribing practices. Regan McCarthy reports some say law enforcement should need a warrant before looking at the list, but others say that's a bitter pill to swallow.
In an effort to crack down on prescription drug abuse, the state created its prescription drug monitoring database. It keeps track of which doctors are prescribing prescription drugs and who they're prescribing them to, in an effort to block patients from what's called doctor shopping. But American Civil Liberties Union of Florida lobbyist Pamela Birch Fort says last year officials released the information of more than 3,000 people from the database.
Why did law enforcement need to obtain the names and private information of 3,300 Floridians when only six individuals were prosecuted? And by what means, what type of wild card search produced such a yield of names?
Birch Fort says her organization thinks law enforcement should need a warrant before accessing the information. But others are concerned that would give scofflaws too big a heads up during an investigation. And Jacksonville Republican Senator Aaron Bean says he's proposing legislation he hopes will create a compromise.
We wanted balance between law enforcement of going after bad guys, but also just protecting the innocent public.
Under Bean's bill, officers would have needed a warrant before accessing the database, but an amendment approved by the Senate Judiciary Committee Tuesday backs away from that provision. Bean says the amendment puts more checks and balances in place.
One of which is creation of a user agreement between the law enforcement agency and the Department of Health. There's an attestation each law enforcement agency had that their agency is in compliance, and then an audit is performed by the agency to make sure that there's no abuse of access to the database.
Tampa Democratic Senator Arthenia Joyner says she's happy the two sides are working together.
And being an advocate of protecting people's rights, I had to reconcile in my mind how this bill would address the problem and also deal with the fact that Florida has been the pill monitoring pinnacle of this country and that we don't want to slide back.
But Joyner says she does think there's room for improvement. And Kissimmee Democratic Senator Darren Soto says he's got an idea where that could start.
I'd just like to see the improvement of DOH or law enforcement articulating a reasonable suspicion. It could be as brief as a sentence or two. When we're dealing with government searches, obviously we have responsibility under the Constitution, and I want to make sure that this bill doesn't get overturned by subsequent court proceeding as well.
Bean's measure would also create a mechanism for patients to give permission for special monitoring during an addiction recovery program and creates an annual budget line item for the program. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy in Tallahassee.
Florida lawmakers have been weighing how to regulate telemedicine, generating debate between doctors' groups and other health care providers. The House has been moving its telehealth proposal along, but as Lynn Hatter reports, the Senate version of the bill had its first hearing today.
There are several different bills on telemedicine for lawmakers to consider, but when it comes to the Senate's plans, only one proposal is finding widespread support from various physician groups, at least so far. That's because an amendment introduced to the bill by Hialeah Republican Representative Renee Garcia singles out nurses, pharmacists, and others who are engaged in their own fight in this year's session.
ARNP, PAs, and pharmacists will be able to practice telemedicine just as they do under their existing scope of practice. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that we're very clear that this does not expand the scope of practice of any of these professions.
That means, for example, advanced registered nurse practitioners, or ARNPs, would still have to work under the supervision of a doctor. The Florida Medical Association, the powerful doctor lobby group, has pushed to limit telemedicine to doctors in Florida. It won that concession in another Senate telemedicine bill. But Phyllis Oders, a lobbyist for the nonprofit South Florida hospital chain Baptist Health, worries restricting telemedicine to Florida registered doctors will hurt the industry.
Nurses are using that, and pharmacists right now are using that. This is in my hospital, but across the country, there's any number of professionals that are using teletechnology in order to increase the patient care levels.
What Oders does not want to see is the state roll that back. That's why her group and others are pleased to see their inclusion in a Senate bill backed by Jacksonville Republican Aaron Bean and in Garcia's amendment. Another Garcia amendment lets out-of-state doctors and Florida-affiliated hospitals, health plans, and so-called sister facilities see Florida patients. The thought is that if anything bad happens, those physicians are still liable under Florida law. But Baker Republican Senator Greg Evers doesn't believe that will be the case.
And then we're going to allow out-of-state doctors, which is fine, but I feel like that they should be required to have coverage to protect in a situation that they give the wrong information. I felt like the bill covered pretty much that up until we added the amendment to the amendment.
Evers and Republican Port Orange Senator Dorothy Huegel are not backing Bean's telehealth bill. Huegel says she's also not supportive of the additional provisions for out-of-state doctors and affiliated hospitals and health plans.
This is very new telemedicine. It may be the wave of the future, but I still think we need to concentrate on the patients. And the bottom line is these doctors are not licensed in Florida. That's it. They're not licensed in Florida. No matter how many exceptions we make, they're not licensed in Florida, so they don't have the same accountability as Florida physicians do. And so I cannot support the bill.
To be clear, telemedicine is already happening in Florida. Now lawmakers just have to agree on the regulatory framework for it. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
A Senate panel unanimously passed a bill that would ensure comprehensive services for sex trafficking victims today. Some children's advocates opposed the bill due to a provision to create a pilot program that would detain victims for as long as 10 months to keep them from returning to their pimps. Others said the locked facility was needed because prostituted children not only run away, but also recruit others. Leslie Gavin, a child psychologist at Nemours Children's Clinic in Orlando, argued that the option of a locked facility was needed for the most damaged victims. She said these are the children most likely to be killed on the street.
They're the ones sometimes referred to by people as the throwaway children who have fallen through the cracks of the system into the hands of the most horrible abusers.
Members of the Senate Children's, Families, and Elder Affairs Committee said they still had questions about the constitutionality of detaining victims on therapeutic grounds. Some said they voted for the bill so that the Senate Judiciary Committee could make the decision. Some, like Senator Denise Grimsley, a Sebring Republican, supported the pilot program.
The locked facilities that we're talking about really have nothing to do with punishment of the children, but it's more about rescuing a traumatized child from themselves and, more importantly, rescuing that child from their captors.
The bill would provide sexually exploited children with medical care and specially trained child protective investigators and case managers. It would also direct the Department of Children and Families to develop services for victims where none exist and to inspect and certify what are known as safe houses. Still to come on Capitol Report.
Abandoned, blighted property that, you know, has been condemned or can't be used.
That image of brownfield sites is what one bill is aimed at erasing from property developers' minds. Governor Scott signs a package of bills intended to make Florida the most inhospitable state in the nation for sexual predators.
But now, today, under Governor Scott's leadership, we say never again, and we mean it. Because Florida will not be a catch-and-release state as it relates to violent sexual predators.
Florida lawmakers have spent years grappling with a contentious issue of juvenile sentencing laws, but the House today may have gotten to an area where everyone can agree. And Florida has many tourist attractions. Its beaches, its theme parks, its clinics.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by The Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving. Putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too. On the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment.
Governor Rick Scott signed 4 sex offender bills into law today during a public ceremony at the Capitol. As Nick Evans reports, the event brought together a number of Republican lawmakers to show off the first bills passed by this year's legislature.
Flanked by lawmakers, sheriffs, and victims' advocates, Governor Scott said the package of bills will make the state safer.
As a father of 2 girls and a grandfather of 3 little boys, I think about how the legislation I'm signing today will affect Florida's families. It will make Florida's children safer, and the 4-bill package adds protections for our communities, especially for our children.
Dina Thompson, who started the Summer Thompson Foundation in honor of her daughter who was abducted by a sexual predator in 2009, says she thinks the laws will send a clear message.
Today, we are all taking a stand together to let those know who pray against our children that Florida is scorched earth, and we will not stand for it.
Senate President Don Gates says the quick passage of these bills shows the legislature's commitment to the issue. House Speaker Will Weatherford agrees.
But I will tell you, Mr. President, to take up this bill on the very first day of session, in the first hour of the Florida Senate, showed the commitment of the Florida Senate and of this legislature to make sure that we got this issue done. I am proud of the efforts.
Port St. Lucie Republican Rep. Gail Harrell says the new laws will completely change the way Florida deals with sexual predators.
So this was a partnership, an endeavor together to make sure we covered all aspects of the spectrum, from law enforcement, from arrest, through incarceration, through the process once they finished their prison terms, so that we could keep the public safe, and most importantly, our children safe.
Fort Walton Beach Republican Rep. Matt Gates says the new laws come with tough new penalties.
There's going to be a 50-year mandatory minimum state prison sanction for anyone who rapes a child under 12, a senior, or someone who's developmentally disabled.
On July 1st, 2 of the new laws take effect. The others take effect in October. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
A measure to revamp the state's juvenile life sentencing laws passed the full House today. We get more on that from Sasha Cordner.
For several years, Florida lawmakers have struggled with how to bring state law into compliance with a couple U.S. Supreme Court decisions. Those rulings say it's unconstitutional to give a juvenile a life sentence without the possibility of parole.
This bill has been something that the legislature has failed to pass for at least the last 4 years, and it has taken someone like Representative Grant to bring us to this point.
As chair of the House Criminal Justice Subcommittee, Fort Walton Beach Republican Representative Matt Gates tasked Tampa Republican James Grant with heading up this year's effort.
I believe we've landed in a place
that is common sense, that ensures that monsters who threaten our public safety are not let out of prison, but that every juvenile sentenced is not seen somehow as a monster, and that we do provide a process for rehabilitation to differentiate between those two juveniles.
The measure splits juveniles into different groups. There are juveniles who've committed serious felonies, those convicted of murder, and those who participated in a murder but didn't actually kill anyone. Then, based on the degree of the crime, Grant's bill would give most juveniles a chance at a review. For example, if a juvenile offender who didn't do the actual killing is sentenced to a term of 15 years or more, a court could look at their sentence after they've served 15 years. They're also eligible for two more reviews that could take place much later. Also, for those convicted of a capital felony charge where the offender participated in the actual killing, a judge could give that juvenile 40 years in prison if they feel a life sentence is too harsh. And Democrats like St. Petersburg Representative Daryl Rusin called it a start.
Very simply put, I want to thank Representative Grant for having made some changes since this bill was first seen in committee. There are some of us who believe it does not go far enough to protect our juveniles from harsh sentences at a time when their brains and their psychology and emotions are still developing. But it is better than what we had.
And others, like Hollywood Democratic Representative Elaine Schwartz, hope to take another bite at the apple later down the road and revisit the issue of how long it takes for juveniles to get a review.
I just sort of wish that we were at the forefront of seeing that incarceration could mean rehabilitation, and that people who are in a position to be mature and the kids and would be able to have review more frequently, and we might be able to redeem their lives. So at some point when you're in the legislature later on, perhaps we'll have an amendment to this increasing the number or decreasing the number of years it takes to have review.
Still, 117 House members agreed to pass the bill unanimously Tuesday. Meanwhile, its companion could be taken up later this week on the Senate floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
The Florida Senate is set to vote on a bill meant to encourage development of contaminated areas known as brownfields. As Jessica Palumbo reports, the measure adds to the lax incentives already offered by giving developers further protection from being sued.
Cranes back up to a multi-story brick building under construction on Tallahassee's Gaines Street. Pretty soon, new student apartments with shops on the ground floor are set to open here.
These brownfields properties are often in prime locations. I mean, we're in the center of the Gaines Street corridor, close to FAMU, close to FSU, close to the governmental centers downtown.
John Powell is the City of Tallahassee's environmental compliance manager.
It's a shame that these areas sit idle for so long because of sometimes low levels or really no levels of contamination, just the perception that there is contamination and the fear by investors of not wanting to get involved.
In this property's case, the contamination was real. It's in a part of town whose ground once oozed with industrial byproducts like arsenic and petroleum. Powell says back when the city owned the site, it cleaned it up using financial help from the state's Brownfields Redevelopment Program before selling it to a private developer.
Often before a developer wants to get involved, they want to understand exactly what it is they're buying.
Since the late 1990s, Florida has enacted several laws meant to incentivize the development of brownfields, offering tax rebates for creating jobs on the site, tax credits for waste removal, and state help with marketing the sites. A bill now headed to the full Senate would specify developers who clean up a site cannot be sued for property damage by adjacent property owners or other third parties. The provision got the attention of the Florida Justice Association, which raised constitutional issues about the right to legal redress. But Florida Brownfields Association President Michael Schnapstiler says nearby property owners would still be able to call on the developer if it's discovered more contamination is coming from the former brownfield site.
That person is required to go clean up that contamination or the liability protection goes away. So the minute you're not following what you were required to do, you are no longer protected and you can be sued.
and the protection would only apply if the developer doesn't further contaminate the site in the cleanup process. On Tallahassee's Gaines Street, environmental manager Powell says besides the liability protection, he's most excited about another part of the bill dealing with the name Brownfields itself. If adopted, the law would tell local governments that just because a site's been designated a brownfield, that doesn't mean you have to call it a brownfield when marketing it to developers.
And we don't know that brownfield necessarily clearly communicates the purpose of the program and really the future plans for redevelopment. We want to look forward. We want to say, let's call it what it's going to be, not what it used to be.
Seminole County authorities are already leading the way on brownfield's image makeover. A once contaminated site there is marketed as SEED, the Seminole Economic Enhancement District. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
After a disturbing newspaper investigation and the murder of a Jacksonville girl, Florida legislative leaders vowed to get tough this year on sexually violent predators. And today, Governor Rick Scott moved quickly to sign a package of bills aimed at keeping sexually violent predators locked up so they can't attack again. Scott signed the package of four separate but related bills during a ceremony in the Capitol's cabinet meeting room that included sheriffs, prosecutors, lawmakers, sexual assault victims, and victims' family members. Scott and other speakers said the bills will make Florida's children safer. Supporters hope the bills will prevent a repeat of incidents such as the kidnapping, rape, and murder last year of 8-year-old Cherish Periwinkle in Jacksonville. That case drew widespread attention. A registered sex offender, Donald Smith, has been arrested in that case. More broadly, supporters hope the legislation will address problems raised in an investigative report by the South Florida Sun-Sentinel. That newspaper reported that the commitment of sexually violent predators under the state's Jimmy Rice Act had slowed to a crawl. Also, it found that since 1999, nearly 600 sexual predators had been released, only to be convicted of new sex offenses, including more than 460 child molestations, 121 rapes, and 14 murders. You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Blaise Gainey now brings us a preview of Wednesday action at the Florida Capitol.
On Wednesday at 8 in the morning, the House Justice Appropriations Subcommittee will be inducting officers into the Florida Law Enforcement Officers Hall of Fame. The same committee will also hear a bill allowing certain K-12 officials the right to bear arms on campus. The House goes into session at 10:30 and may vote on a series of bills related to the 2014 through 2015 school budget. At 1 o'clock, the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Finance and Tax will hear a bill that would suspend sales taxes from hurricane preparedness items such as two-way radios, first aid kits, and portable generators for 12 days each year. Also at 1, the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on General Government will hear a bill that would make the Florida Homeowners Construction Recovery Fund more accessible to homeowners. Later at 4 in the Senate, the Rules Committee will be hearing a bill that would allow pharmacists to increase the number of technicians they can supervise. Those are some of the items on the legislative agenda for Wednesday, April 2nd. I'm Blaise Gainey.
Finally, tonight, we're back on the tourism beat. Yesterday, Stan Jastrzebski had a story about plans to boost Florida tourism by spotlighting the state's African-American cultural sites. During that discussion at the legislature, the bill's sponsor noted Florida already markets itself to other specialty tourism markets. Today, her point was borne out as the House Finance and Tax Subcommittee debated the merits of spending more to position the state as a medical tourism destination. Stan has the latest on that.
Medical tourism is a function of the free market. If one location's doctors offer a particular medical procedure cheaper than those in a patient's home country or state, that patient may elect to travel a great distance for an operation or therapy. West Palm Beach Republican Representative Patrick Rooney's bill would give the state's tourism corporation, Visit Florida, $3.5 million a year to develop a medical tourism marketing plan. Even though the bill passed its first stop unanimously Tuesday, lawmakers raised concerns about about its validity. Weston Democrat Richard Stark questioned how Florida could possibly say it's cheaper to visit Sunshine State doctors.
Florida, on the chain of cost of medical insurance, is the highest in the country, at least South Florida is. So I'm really going to be watching this because, I mean, I really want to see some type of a plan and why people want to come to Florida.
And Miami Beach Rep. David Richardson worried just a few doctors could reap the majority of any outside cash the effort brings in.
Is there a concern that if we give Enterprise Florida that authority that they may decide to choose certain winners and certain losers by highlighting certain facilities and then ignoring others? Is that a concern?
And then there was the political concern raised by Parkland Democrat Jared Moskowitz, who noted that some procedures are more politically touchy than others.
Have you given any considerations into putting certain things in here that we don't want to promote without getting political? There could be some medical procedures that you may not want to promote with this money. Have you thought about putting those specifically in the bill?
Thank you, Mr. I have not, Representative Moskowitz, but obviously, you know, this is the first committee stop, so if there's any ideas that anybody has, I'm more than willing to listen to them.
Okay.
But Lantana Democratic Representative Lori Berman came to Rooney's aid with the story of her husband's dental practice.
As many of you know, my husband is a dental specialist, and people do travel from around the country to visit him, and I think people do travel to Florida to come to various doctors. And I think it's something we can promote and build on. So I think it's a great idea, and I'll be supporting it today.
And there was even time to play an April Fool's Day prank on Committee Chairman Rich Workman by way of a public comment card. Listen closely to the name and the organization the fake person is said to represent.
And last but not least, Harry Legg, Dermatology Associates. He is listed as a proponent on the bill.
Kidding aside, lawmakers also worried the bill gives the money to visit Florida in perpetuity, even though the legislation is only designed to fund a four-year pilot project. Multiple times, Rooney brushed aside questions about the bill's language, saying only that he's amenable to changing it between committee hearings. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Stan Jastrzebski.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Lynn Hatter, Stan Jastrzebski, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo, along with Blaze Ganey. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report, and join us again each weeknight during the 2014 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care, on the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through U.S. Airways with direct flights from Tallahassee to Charlotte and Washington, D.C., and over 200 connections to destinations around the globe. Fares and information available online at usairways.com. Lisa Miller and Associates, offering strategies to solve legislative, regulatory, and business development challenges. Every challenge offers new opportunities for individually tailored client solutions. Online at lisamillerassociates.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 500,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace, online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.